Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How's it, guys? Welcome to another episode of The Box Office, coming from Rondebosch Boys High School. England almost hung on. Ireland are the champions. Wales get the wooden spoon. And Italy, probably the most improved team of the Six Nations. We're also going to pick our team of the tournament. Joining me is going to be Robbie Fleck, Jean de Villiers away, unfortunately, Skalkberger, and myself from Rondebosch Boys High School on The Box Office, which is now open.
Timmy, it feels like you're not giving back enough here, but...
No, I'll put something.
Is that because you went to Bishop's for a while, no?
No, 1 year.
Made you a book.
Hey, 1 year. One year, 13. I became a swimmer at 13 years old when I went to Bishop.
Yeah, made you a buck.
Yeah.
Made you a buck.
Kote was 12 years old.
Just imagine what we could have done with Scala and John, bro.
What's that?
Just imagine what we could have done with Scala and John.
If we had 1 year there.
I've been told in your matric year, you got beaten by Bishops.
Eh? No.
You just got banned, bud.
We moved the axe. You know? So
it's physically.
No, it's matric.
Scala, you moved them on the field?
Did Bishops refuse to play the next year or something?
You know, started it. There was two guys. Aaron Rustoff and Nick Fenton's brother.
There was a proper fight. Huh?
Yeah, and then they kicked off off the field as well, the parents.
There's only one winner in that.
Yeah.
it's not Bishops.
There wasn't Bishops. That's my butch started it. I just finished it.
Mm. Oh, to your band. We're good to 2 o'clock.
Smash them now.
Okay. Skala, Flecky, welcome back. Different environment. I'll start with you, Flecky. Holy ground here. The holy grail, the house of pain. What a rugby field. Rondebosch Boys High School. I changed up just down the road from where you went to school. Or in between the two schools you went to. Because you're half Bishops, half Weinberg. I can't forget.
Yeah, the helicopter apparently was just starting its descent.
Yeah, the helicopter that picked him up from Weinberg
to bring him to
Bishops. Yeah.
Parachute.
Nervous when you come here?
Nah, never lost here, Shami, to be honest.
Yeah.
Scala? Very, very happy hunting ground for me here.
We'll just finish there.
We lost the game, yeah, but like I wasn't part of it. But like when I was standing at 9 years, we lost, yeah. Justin Melk will remind me every single time. The Sandfeld boer. Hold on, Shami. There's something wrong with your attire. We've got a Rondebosch cheese cutter. Just put it on there. Just want to see if it still fits. That's beautiful.
It works. I can have it on the whole show, you know. We'll be welcome back here.
So Shimmy Bishops obviously takes the credit for you becoming a buck out of
this. No. Flecky just mentioned that.
1 year at Bishops.
1 year at what, 13 years old. Look, I learned the game there. Perfected it, yeah. I've said that before.
So they made you.
We also beat Paul Jim.
They made you a box.
Beat Paul Jim. They look like Paul Jim under 21s here with Louis Kuhn and the gang. When they came here, 3-0.
Post-rain.
3-0. 3-0 in the rain.
What year was that? 90?
95. It's the only time we beat them. Ever.
It's a long time ago.
After that, no, they're following you. Mario Schumann.
Yes.
I think Yvette Barry would have played. You'll know a lot of that, Cam.
Yeah.
At score was 0-0, 79 minutes. We lost 7-0. Morris Kuman, long.
What was up with the games back then against you guys? Did you just pray for rain? Did you do a rain dance here or whatever?
3-0, 7-0.
There's no chance.
So you played against Malky or Justin Malky's?
Played against Malky.
How good was he?
He was all guts, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And he had he's obviously started going bold and gray and stand at 7. Which obviously seriously made us all think
the great guy next to you laughing.
Which made all of us think like, listen, when did this kid get registered? I mean, he looked like he's dead, you know, pretty much. Like big arm hairs, beard, full grown beard at standard 6 and then started losing his hair, thinning out. They had nothing left in matric. But yeah, they got one over us. I remember watching the game actually. before the stand was up here. Just sitting on the two steps or three steps you had there in the temporary stand.
Yeah.
And can't remember the score. Went down to Ronnebosch.
Flicky, you're on that Bishop's run, that long and beaten run, yeah.
Yeah.
It was what, close to, what, 14, 15 years or something?
I think it was that long, but gosh, there were some good sides that came through Bishop's in the sort of mid-80s, late 80s through to, you know, the early 90s. And we had a good run against Bosch. And there were some good Bosch sides that came through, yeah. I mean, guys like Dino Koenigan, captain of Ireland, he played close games. I think that game in 89 in the rain was Bishop's 1-9-6 or something like that. Mm. So it was... yeah, look, it's always tough to come and play at Bosch. I mean, it's a traditional rivalry. And
you'd be nice because you've got to play them later on this year with Bishop.
Well, you know, things
you have to be.
Times have changed a little bit. I think we, you know, Bishop's have squeaked in the odd win to cancel any sort of decade-long losses.
Yeah.
I think Bosch have done an incredibly role over the late, and Bishop's have got some tough times against him.
Yeah. Flicky, you're just one thing all your mates always talk about the Weinberg, unbeaten Weinberg team. The 10. I think Jacques Callas was
Jacques Callas was the fly-off, yeah.
And how good was that team?
Mate,
never lost?
Never lost again. So from basically under 7, we went unbeaten all the way up until high school. Then the team sort of split up.
Half of it went to Bishop's.
Half went to Bishop's. The other half stayed. But... no, it was an amazing side. I mean, I think we went through under 10 with not a point being scored against us.
No
way. It was a brilliant side. And Jacques Callas was a phenomenal fly-off. He could kick it over from anywhere. You know, those old Springbok balls that were watered down and
yes.
Waterlogged, you know, he used to build a little castle of sand. And just knock it over. Yeah. He was a great rugby player.
When did he have chosen cricket then? Did he play till matric or what?
No, so he played rugby all the way through. I think in his sort of his 8 year or whatever, grade 10, he stopped playing and he just focused on the cricket. And back in his matric year, he played.
Yeah.
But he suddenly grew. I mean, Jacques Callas was tiny at school. Tiny.
Yeah.
And so then suddenly he shot up and he played in his last year. But, I mean, his main focus was cricket, obviously. But Jacques, a phenomenal rugby player.
Once we have a few cranberry coolers, me and Jock, he always goes, like, I'll give up 50 test matches. Just for one game, for Western Province, that's life.
Yeah.
Look, he's got like 165 test matches, so he can sacrifice 50. But he was like, his dream was to play fly-off at Newlands for Province.
And certainly capable of doing that, sure.
AB, you never played against. AB was also...
My brother played against him.
AB, he was also a fly-off,
So they played at some festival, Paul Jim versus Uffies, and he was fly-off. And after a few also brandies, I think it was this time, he
cool.
said, listen, he remembered my brute just chasing him around for 80 minutes.
Yeah.
But yeah, proper talented ABA. Like, he can pick up anything and be good at it.
Yeah. Good golfer also. Well, they're both good golfers, Callas and
Villiers. Hits it a mile.
And Herschel, Callas, you think about it. Also, Callas Herschel can play golf also.
No, they're all brilliant. I mean, just brilliant sportsmen. Yeah. I mean, Herschel can pick up a table tennis bat and just beat everyone.
Yeah.
You know, just anything that he touched, you know, basketball, hockey. Brilliant footballer. I mean, he was SA Schools, like, I think, under 18 football.
This Herschel.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember Mark Fish. I think Mark Fish always chirped him saying, what the hell were you doing playing
cricket? I think that was his best sport.
So you should have just stuck with football.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the rugby players go like, why did you pick cricket? You know?
Well, contracting, it wasn't IPL.
Shame, man. But if your worst suit is playing cricket for South Africa, shame. You didn't really make
a
mistake.
IPL.
Yeah, or playing IPL. Yeah. We're making 175 against the Aussies, you know, chasing down 400 and what is it? 40-odd.
Good. Quick one, boys. Let's talk about the Six Nations. Now, three matches separated by 4 points, three and 2 points. The last 2 weeks, Flicky, last time we saw you, you said it wasn't exciting.
They listened to Flicky.
Six Nations. They listened to you, Flicky.
Oh, Shabba, I'll still back up that statement. I think the initial stages of the tournament were, you know, weren't great, but the last two weekends were... phenomenal rugby. I mean, great to watch. I mean, especially this last weekend, France, England, Italy, Wales, you know, just, you know, they really did ramp it up, you know, in the last two weekends and some exceptional, you know, individual performances. But from a team perspective, the way England started the competition, you know, we were struggling with the way, what style that they wanted
Ireland,
to play.
Ireland, Scotland first. We're going to get to England.
Okay.
Ireland, Scotland first. Let's talk about, first of all, congratulations to Ireland. back-to-back Grand Slam and then Six Nations. But Scotland made it hard for them.
Yeah, they did. And Scotland always do, you know, the way they play the game. You know, we've spoken about that, you know, 2 weeks ago, that just with Finn Russell, Hugh Jones, Duan Funamewa, they've got the ability to break the line and put teams under pressure, well coached by Gregor Townsend. You know, they just, and they, you know, they're always going to be in it, you know, just the way that they play. But Ireland are just too clinical, you know, outstanding rugby team, well coached. You know, they were always going to win that game for me. And they deserved, you know, Six Nations champions.
But yeah, they were dominant there. But like, I think what let Scotland into the game more was the first half, they were just too lateral on attack. You know,
the Ireland,
not direct enough.
Yeah.
And playing it out the back. And like, what's unusual to see is like Christie, the Scottish Open side, got quite a few turnovers, 3 or 4 in the first half. And that was against Ireland. That was indicative that they were too loose, you know, just playing too laterally. Straight after halftime, big ball carriers, get him into the game, play direct, you know, go at them. And I mean, the tackle stats for Scotland was off the charts. Great defensive, you know, performance by Scotland, but didn't create enough opportunities because, you know, you're the underrated part of about the Ireland side is how good they defend and how hard is it to get score against them. But like, you know, big decision halftime was quite clear that they changed. Now we're going straight through the middle. We go through the guts of the Scottish defence instead of playing out the back and trying to skim them.
Yeah, which is their way, Scully, because the way they're set up, they're nice and tight, early cleans, early carries, you know, they're able to recycle the ball, not get crop up possession. And, you know, when they get a bit loose, then they look like an average team.
No,
when
they
tighten it up, they're nice and direct with front ball options. They're very, very good.
Yeah, and that can happen for various reasons. Maybe that was the plan. Or sometimes, you know, as a young fly, Jack Crowley, you get ahead of yourself and you feel that the space, because it's not like Scotland's got a hard defence like us or like maybe England put them under pressure last week. You know, it feels like there's more space. But like sometimes, you know, you sort of hang yourself by calling it too early, going your wide too early, and you sort of lose your shape and you create wide rucks, and then all of a sudden you lose your shape and turnovers occur.
But there could have been a focus as well, you know, maybe targeting Hugh Jones and Duan Funamewa on the edge.
Exactly.
Maybe that's where the space and the planning was to go to the edge. But like you said, they lost their way and they gave them too much ball.
Yeah, sure.
Ireland started off well, but tapered off. Did you ever get the feeling that, shucks, maybe Scotland could roll them over here? Because I got the feeling you're waiting for the damn wall to sort of break open. But it was when Porter got that try right at the end.
Yeah.
But Scotland, defensively, we talk about Scotland being the fastest team in the world, trying to play this high-tempo game. They were actually defended better than they did attack this game.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, also the amount of entries into the 22 Ireland had without converting. It's normally they're so clinical when they get there. Eventually, they reverted to the quick the quick tap and go, which we've seen, you know, Leinster do a hell of a lot. And then they scored a try with that little swivel around the back, which I like, those little, you know, tap and go little moves. Dominance in certain areas of the game. But like if you playing against the Scotland side, you know, if they're going to have opportunities or you're going to cough a ball up, they're going to strike through Finn Russell or Duan Funamewa. And because they were within a score, all of us sort of felt a little bit edgy about the game. But I think on the balance of, you know, dominance, you know, Ireland was in charge of that game.
Scotland, again, the so-called greatest Scottish team of all time. No titles. They play an exciting brand of rugby, but still, it's always what-ifs with them. You know, you think about it. If they'd beaten France, you know, they had that run against that victory against England. They beat Wales for the first time, I think, in 22 years.
Yeah.
Where do you guys put them now as a team? Are they on the upward trajectory or stagnant? Because a lot of it, when Scotland do well, it's Finn Russell, but he can't do it by himself.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think for me, Shem, you mentioned Finn Russell. They're key players that are making that Scotland team operate. You know, the hooker, I think his name is Turner.
Yeah.
I thought he was exceptional. I think, obviously, there's Hugh Jones out wide, Finn Russell, Duan. You know, there's key individual players that are keeping this team together and pushing them on, you know, that upward trajectory that you talk about. And it's the way that they play. You know, like, I really do, you know, appreciate the way that they want to play the game.
Yeah.
But is it going to win them a World Cup? Is it going to win them the Six Nations, the style of play that they're playing? Do they have enough players in the paddock, you know, to win a Six Nations tournament? And probably the answer is no. You know, they probably need to, you know, unearth a few more players, you know, to get the complete performance. And maybe, you know, from a game management point of view, just understand that test match rugby is test match rugby, and it's not all about the razzmatazz and scoring these tries and surviving on scraps. You know, that's not going to win them a trophy.
Yeah, I think their bandwidth is just a little bit too narrow. They've got a blueprint through Finn Russell and playing this quick up-tempo game. I remember when Gregor took over, he said he wants Scotland to be the fastest playing nation in the world, which is massively ambitious.
That was Japan, I think, World Cup,
Yes, and massively ambitious. And like they have added that part. But like when Ireland goes, listen, we're going to front up and break you, bust you down through the middle, that's when they battle. That's correct. When Scotland can't set piece, you know, dominance.
Just like
they can't get
it to them in the World Cup.
100%. And then you start getting to 9, then you start getting through to number 10. All of a sudden, players are getting frustrated outside because they're not getting gain line dominance. And we know against better sides, you can't play around them. We've got to try and get through them. So if there's a weakness for me, it's a little bit of a soft underbelly up front where, you know, if they're not playing with speed and create front football and dominate through Finn Russell calling it out the back and getting, you know, little offloads going in between, they don't have the firepower to go straight through the best teams in the world.
Yeah. Scully, just last one on Scotland. Which team has done well with the Maverick fly-off? We talk about Finn Russell. You know, he puts bums on seats. People like watching it. But if you look at it, I mean, Johnny Wilkinson wasn't a Maverick. Henry Pollard's not a Maverick. Dan Carter wasn't a Maverick. Great fly-off, not a Maverick. Which team has been successful with a Maverick? Do they need maybe a more pragmatic fly-off who can play to the corners, you know, kick it down there, play test match rugby? Because it's entertaining, but the titles haven't come. Or does he change? Does the approach change?
The problem they've got is there's a massive difference when Finn Russell's playing for Scotland and he's not playing. There's, I mean, without Finn, you know,
their
tactics looks super average, you know. Yeah. So, and I understand he's got, you know, license to be Finn Russell and, you know, play the rugby and play pragmatic style of rugby, which like we all like. But like it's bloody hard if you're a fly-off and you want to play that style and you don't get dominance up front. And then it gets too lateral. And like we saw with the box in Marseille last year, we got to him early on. We put him on the deck quite a few times. All of a sudden the ball starts dropping, bad kicks, bad exits. And that snowball effect plays up eventually. But he's a good player.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it comes to that age-old thing of, you know, do you play to, you know, the player's skill sets and the type of player that you've got? Or have you chosen a style of play and then you try and recruit players who can play that play? And at the moment, Scotland have chosen...
They don't have the numbers also.
Well, no, they've chosen a style of play. So you can't put Henry Pollard in the Scottish outfit at the moment and expect to win a test. It won't happen.
Yeah.
It's two contrasting styles. Yeah. It's the same discussion we had about Marcus Smith, you know, a couple of weeks back. You know, he's a fly-off that can play in the Scotland setup in the terms of the way that they play. I mean, he's an attacking genius. But if you try and put him in a Springbok setup, he's not going to suit the style.
Yeah.
And he's not going to execute the game plan that the Springboks want to play. So it's Finn Russell right now is the perfect suit for the way Scotland want to play. If you're going to find somebody else, it won't work. Then you're going to have to change the style of play and then bring in somebody else.
Maybe the answer is that the other players need to step up to his level to make it look a lot better. Because if you're relying on one guy,
yeah, I mean, if you think back to what we grew up watching or playing against, is, you know, like Carlos Spencer and the Blues, dominant Blues side, early 2000s, you know, before the Crusaders started winning.
Yeah.
You know, how good was he? And he had a free reign to go berserk, you know, start goose-stepping, loop-around, double loop-arounds.
He had Vindiri, Lomu, Lee Stainsness.
I know, when he ran into a dark avenue, he sort of just throw it out the back, kick and you go carry
it
up.
Yeah.
But then for him, with the All Blacks at the time, it was a little bit different.
Yeah.
You know? It was Mertens, and then you had, obviously, Spencer. And like what Mertens could provide and winning test matches by kicking, dominating through his boot. If you then go into the Spencer, you know, into the Spencer camp, it's quite hard for him to fit into that. And I think, you know, like Finn Russell, if that's the way Gregor sees his team, best chance of winning games against big nations, you know, give him free reign because he is something special.
Guys, what's your take? I mean, Andy Farrell says South Africa are 100% the best team in the world because obviously we're going to welcome them to the Republic in a month or two's time. Finn Russell says 100% Ireland are the best team in the world. Who's talking the truth here?
Farrell.
Farrell.
Like I think, you know, especially with Russie, I think like he's the world's best at creating a narrative where, you know, it's the end of the world, Armageddon, everyone's against the box.
Yeah.
Ireland is the best team by far and we'll follow into Russie's slipstream. But at the end of the day...
Well, he made an interesting quote saying, look, the Springboks aren't worried about win percentages in between World Cups.
Yeah, exactly.
Our
it's about World
it.
Cups.
Yeah.
And I guess that sort of suits what Russie goes, you know, goes about. Like he knows that like a lot of these current crop of players, you know, is probably going to be touch and go in that age. A lot of them will be going 34 to say 36, 7 years old. but not everyone can go. So there's a transition period that the Rassie will have to handle. And I think that will start happening this year already. You know, give young players or give players who's been on the fringes quite a lot of chance and play against the best players in the world. And maybe, you know, you lose a test match along the way. But, I mean, all of us, me and Flecky, we're fans of how Ireland play. And Ireland's never won a series in South Africa. A really good chance in 2016. Lost the test match up at Ellis Park. But, yeah, they've got a good chance of doing it this year, although... You know, both of us sitting here, like, we want the box to give them a...
I'm a fan, you know, not only of the way Ireland play, but I'm a fan of Farrell. You know, you know, he's just brutal honesty. Yeah. You know, he's genuine. You know, what you see is what you get. You know, I love the way he deals with the media. I don't think he's going to say something that he doesn't necessarily believe in. And he's not going to create, you know, the way it was going between Rassie and Gatland during the Lions series.
No, there's no gamesmanship.
It's for him.
So you don't think this is gamesmanship?
No.
I think he's been... dead honest. I think he's been genuine. He's going, South Africa are the best and that's where we want to go to. And, and we want to beat them in the backyard. So he's almost stepping up to this challenge of going, I'm happy to go head on with the Springboks. I'm not going to play games behind the scenes. He, you know, I've met him, you know, once or twice. He comes across as a genuine, good guy.
Yeah, he's a good man.
You know, and he's good at what he does and he likes a real challenge and he's fronting up to that.
Yeah. They've beaten us, I think, the last three times. I'm right. The last time we beat Ireland was 2016.
Well, I mean, I remember from our generation, Ireland was our bogey side.
Yeah.
Like, we never got them at a World Cup, but, like, our record against them was terrible. We beat them twice in 2004, up in Bloemfontein and down here in Cape Town. And then after that, we went on a bit of a losing streak against them.
Yeah. Because it was the Springbok 100th year. I remember we had that with the original jerseys.
Brian O'Banner at
13. That, and then we lost in Ireland.
Wasn't that when Jake White said that not one Irish... player would make.
No, that was
that was quite a motivational chat. I played that game.
Yeah,
that was at Lansdowne Road.
At Lansdowne Road, yeah. So that was straight after we played them here in 2004. Was it 2004? I think it was.
Yeah, 2004. We played them.
And then we played them there and lost by a couple of points at the Lansdowne Road. But you're right. That's also where Paul Honus told John Smith, yeah, he can have Arnold. And then.
But still, Skelly, I mean, what was the chat after the game when you lost when Jake said. Not one of you guys.
No, then obviously quite a few of them walked into us.
There were some jerseys.
Yeah.
We had that big function off and then we played England the following week.
Oh, look, I mean, if you're a player and that comes out, you sort of just put the paper down and go, boys, we've just did their team talk for them.
Yeah. I mean, that's plastered up on the change room.
Best Irish players you guys have come up against?
Oh, there's plenty.
Yeah, well, obviously for me, it's O'Driscoll.
Yeah.
I think I played against him in one test and then one Barbarians game, and he absolutely dazzled me. I mean, it was just phenomenal, you know.
Yeah.
I didn't even touch him. He was just brilliant. But for me, a special player, you know, so he's the one guy that stood out. Yeah.
Scala up front?
Well, there's great men like Paul O'Connell played against him and... Like, it's not often about what you do on the field. It's afterwards when you sit and you share a beer and you just see salt of the earth come across. They've just beaten you wherever and six lagers in the hand and then come across and you spend the night together. Like, it's quite tough often, you know, like you really want to beat them there in their backyard and you don't get it over the line. Also remember one game at Lansdowne Road, the wind was humping and Ronan O'Gara, Rog, just kicked these low torpedoes and there's like one bounce up.
Yeah, that clear, you can manage again.
Obviously, open side flanker trying to get to him, but I was more in awe of how tight these little torpedoes was coming off his right foot. It was amazing.
No, but, and then also, you look at now with the Irish team, Omani retiring. Well, it looks like he was retiring. You know, you talk about him at the end of the game. There is speculation about that. Who would skipper the team coming to South Africa? What names would pop up?
Doris, I think.
I'd say Doris as well.
I think because he's been playing really well for them. And I think it will be a nice fit for him. I don't know. I think him, I don't know if Funafleer is the type to be skipper.
He looks like he's behind the scenes.
He looks like he's...
The quiet sort of leader.
The quiet
leader. Who's that, Funder?
Funafleer.
Yeah, really? Okay.
And then, obviously, like, you know, youngish 10, so you can't make him skip. Flipping hell. Gibson Park again on the weekend. Good player, hey. Proper.
Speed.
But what do you guys, do you think the influence of 10s, of 9s is back now? You look at Mitchell with England, and how influential his kicking is. You look at France when they put this Nolan Legarec. He changed sort of the outlook of the French.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned Gibson Park. As much as they had a young fluff, they're two experienced scrum off and experienced center. That the nines, the role of the nines, you know, we grew up in the days of, you know, Fourie Dupree played. Jos van der Vestes and Matt Dawson. You look at what Marshall did. Is the role of the nines coming back?
I think it's always been most touches on the field.
Yeah.
And second most touches is number 10. So I guess the mark of the real good ones is how easily they get the ball out the ruck and how low the error rate is. And they almost have the ability to paint a picture before they get to the ruck of where they are. And then obviously you look at a Gibson Park, you look at some of the better Southern Hemisphere nines, that cheat line they run, you know. Yeah. They just basically, when there's offload to be had, they're in behind and they...
Legarec try on the weekend, you know, and the inside ball from the fullback.
Yeah.
Barry was unbelievable. So that cheat line that he gets there in support. But he's got speed. So he gets there in support. He looks like a special player coming
through. Legarec, he's good, eh?
Yeah.
Very good.
Because I know there's a call early on when DuPont, well, obviously didn't play, put him in instead of Luku.
Yeah.
But that was the big change. When France started getting their selections right, they started looking like a better team.
Yeah. But look, I mean, the nine doesn't work on his own. And like Scala said, it's that 9-10 combination that's key. And, you know, you think about France, you know, they've probably dropped off since, you know, obviously DuPont wasn't there and Ntamack, you know, in the World Cup, as soon as Ntamack was out, you know, they weren't the same side. So, you know, with that youngster there now, Legarec and DuPont maybe coming back and Ntamack coming back, and then Ramos can go back to 15. You've got that spine working again for them. They will be a different outfit, you know, with the brutality and the size of the forwards that they've got. But, yeah, that sort of that 9-10 combo is key. And Ireland have been able to you know, replace Sexton quite well, you know. I mean, he's obviously that youngster's come through and he's been the understudy. But Gibson Park has been able to make that transition for him quite easy.
But you look at you look at the age profile of this team. About 6 or 7 of these guys might not be around the next week. It's quite a, if you look at the age, there's quite a lot. I mean,
but there's a lot of youth, Shim. You know, I mean, the Ireland under 20s are phenomenal.
England under 20s won the Six Nations.
Yes,
now.
But previous.
In France, it was Ireland and France.
That yes, correct. Yeah. So the Irish have got great systems, you know, from the schoolboy rugby to the Irish under 20s. You know, they've got a lot of good players coming through. The Leinster Academy produces quality players. I think, you know, Farrell's got bringing through.
Yeah. What's that? You're saying they'll be good?
They will be good.
Yeah, I think so.
They'll have enough.
It's a good organization.
I think they're under pressure. Brilliant. I think they're under pressure to bring through another quality nine.
Yeah.
Behind Gibson Park. Someone who plays in the same vein, you know, not as, you know, like Murray, who's more conservative, kicks well. He's slowed down
because
a little bit.
Because they're a ruck-driven side.
Ruck-driven side. They need that speed. And like Gibson Park's standout features, how he speeds up the ruck.
Correct.
How do the Boks beat Ireland? When they come here at Loftus.
I don't think much is going to change from our approach. And it's going to be how efficient and effective our defense can be against their attack. We know we've got the physicality to challenge them more than any of the Northern Hemisphere teams. We saw that in that first 25 minutes in Dublin last year. If you think Damon Dallinder's carries through the guts, those first 3-4 carries, Peter Steph's carries through the ruck. But they put us under pressure in our defensive system because we never ever back down. We never ever have 1-2 and then use the touchline as our safety net.
Yeah.
And, you know, if their breakdown is as effective as it was up in Paris on that night, you know, they put us under pressure.
I think the key difference for me, Scala, is the appointment of Tony Brown. Mm. You know, we had plenty of set piece opportunities, you know, in their 22 or just outside of their 22 with Tony there. An exceptional rugby brain.
Yeah.
And I feel that our set piece attack, you know, not the ball of the scrum. No, I didn't coach him.
At the Stormers, weren't you?
You played with him.
Sorry, Flick, I interrupted you
there. No, not sorry. but the point is that what he will bring to the table is some proper attacking acumen. I mean, he is a genius attack coach, especially from set piece. He's going to bring something really different. So it's just not going to be Damien Delander into the vacuum and the forwards coming around the corner. There's going to be subtle differences in terms of what we do from walls, what we do from a five-man lineout, the second phase options that we're going to have. I think we're going to become a far more dynamic attacking outfit with him in the mix, which is going to put Ireland under pressure because Ireland can defend us if we're just coming around the corner. But if we start showing them different options and different pictures, I think it's a different story.
Yeah, in saying that, I think we'll definitely go through a bit of a transition phase in our defense. You know, like Jock was exceptional, the best defensive coach in the world.
Yeah.
Like, and the way we defended is because of Jock. And the problem with that defense is this tiniest little thing around the ruck, you know, that half a meter where one guy can roll up and fill in at number one on the far side, creates that extra half a meter or 2 meters outside for Chesson to make a good read on it. So, you know, we've lost him. Yes, we've got Dwayne Vermeulen and Jerry Flannery who's taken over. But whenever you lose someone that's a head of a department, often
you lose something there.
A guy like Rassi will have to like come a little bit closer to the defensive side and help out a little bit and say, listen, okay, how do we go about replacing Jock? So, and against this Irish side, you don't want to be in a transition period when it comes to a defense. I don't think we'll change the way we defend, but often the small little details when we've got such an aggressive rush can make a big difference.
But the key individuals like Jesse Creel, Lucanio Aim, who actually run that
defense. So, Flicky, you're picking the team for us already now?
Yeah, I am.
Okay.
Absolutely. But those two guys run that defense from the edge. We can't get off the line and close the Irish options if those two gents aren't playing.
Yeah. But, okay, you look at the Irish team now. Flicky, you mentioned the attack with Tony Brown. England started to attack better. It's generally accepted that attack takes longer to sort out than defense. We've got Wales and then Ireland.
Yeah.
Will we be ready by then? From an attack point of view. Defense, we know. We've got a strong DNA there. Attack, you mentioned the subtle differences. Will we be ready by Ireland?
I think we will. Like I said, I've got the utmost respect for Tony Brown as a coach and as a human being. So the players will buy into his way pretty quickly. And I think that Rassi will give him carte blanche. You know, he'll allow him to be, you know, who he is in the way that he wants to coach and the options that he'll bring to the team. So I think we will be ready in that regard. I think the players will be pretty excited about what he can bring to the table. So, you know, maybe the Wales, game, we won't be that, polished, but certainly by come Ireland. South Africa doesn't want to lose, those two tests.
Outside of a World
Cup. Rassi will be, preparing, he's been preparing for a while now for those two tests. And, I mean, it is going to be a shootout between the two best sides in the world. And I'm certainly looking forward to a different style of attack that the Springboks may offer. I mean, think about it. Tony's coached the Japanese side to great effect with Jamie Joseph, and they played some sublime attacking rugby. Now he's got some big human beings, that he can use to get good front football. And then he's got these electric backs. Guaranteed set piece, left shoulder, right shoulder from a scrum, a maul that can operate, which drags all the defenders in. You can slide out of that with many options. So I think you'll be, licking his lips in terms of what he can do.
Having played with Tony as well, it will be an evolution bit by bit because he's got such tools at his disposal. It's about the subtlety.
Yeah.
So, but like, how do you enhance, the box physicality? It shouldn't be one guy running through the wall. What is our options?
You've mentioned the pullbacks, looking at the running options.
Without becoming lateral, how do we get the players to work harder, to get set early, to have a decent look at what's in front of him? Not arrive there late, get a tuck outside shoulder, decent carry, but like you haven't had a look because your work rate hasn't been hard enough. It's how do you get those small little things? We can take a decent picture of the defensive line and then pick on the weaker defender or pick on the space.
Wow. Not just one runner, three or four options inside of outside of 10. That's what he'll do.
Wales, we've spoken about it.
The
dragon, is the dragon dead?
We mentioned it.
Does the dragon still have fire?
The whole box office, I think it probably needs a bit of fuel.
Warren Gatlin
and
said no must at the end apparently, and they said no, you're not going anywhere.
Well, fair play to him, Shim. I mean, he's gone along and said, listen, we've landed up as wooden spoon.
Yes.
I'll hand in my resume. I mean, it takes a man to do that. But they've turned around and said, no, this is when we need you most. So I think it's a good decision from the Welsh Rugby Union to keep him on board.
Yeah.
But they've won
this whole tournament.
What's that?
I know.
No win. Nothing.
They've got a long way to go.
Crowd.
Lots of youngsters, but they've got a long way to go.
Like, this was the game that was always going to, give their season a feel, a look or a feel. And unfortunately for them, when they played against the better sides, there was a fear that maybe they can go down by 40 or 50 points and the youngsters fronted up. But this one is where they believe they can actually beat Italy. And I think the performance in itself was frustrating because of the error rate and the ill discipline. And these players have got a long, long way to go. You know, like Warren Gatland, you know, it's a hard task this because he's got to change his ways. You know, gone are the days where he had a blueprint of suffocate and strangle,
the Gats way,
and somehow they get results.
Warren Ball. What was it? Warren Ball.
Warren Ball. So now you've got a new generation of players. And to our point earlier with a guy like Finn Russell, you've got these kids want to play rugby. And you've got to facilitate them playing rugby without making, you know, 35 errors in a game. But Italy looked the better side, better coach side.
Italy were good.
They played phenomenal.
Amazing
how patient they were in defense. And then when they did get a chance to attack, you know, that was it, the first try where the three offloads in a row happened, like it's proper.
But is Gatland still the right guy though? I mean, we don't know him personally, obviously, but you look at the results, you look at what's happening at Welsh rugby, you look at what happened with Eddie during the World Cup.
Well, if
there's a lot that's not happening domestically, like, that impacts the national
team. He's obviously
team.
Got, you know, the confidence in him is instilled by the union. You know, like if someone hands in his resignation saying, sorry, that wasn't good enough, and they go, like, don't worry, you are the right man for the job. Yeah, the problem is, like, what has he got to work with? You know, like, we see URC and we see the Welsh sides come down to Cape Town, it'll be a perfect day, like we've got the outside, and they play with lack of ambition, you know, like no energy on the ball.
Playing the game down.
The game down. So, like, you want them to actually identify what their style is and play towards that, similar to what, you know, Zebre and Benetton's doing.
Flicky Gonzalo Cusada.
Legend.
My man.
Yeah. My man. What a legend.
Magic.
Gonzalo. Oh, jeez. What a human being as well. You know, good guy. Brilliant coach. I coached against him for the Jaguars, played against him, you know, when he played for Argentina. Just a brilliant human being and just an outstanding knowledge of the game and the way he gets buy-in from the players, the collective buy-in. He changed the Jaguars outfit in Super Rugby back in the day, you know, 3-4 years ago when he was coaching there, to a brilliant outfit. And they played a sublime, you know, style of rugby. And what he's done with Italy, you can just see there's huge buy-in from the players, his management. They're playing a brand that is so exciting, but it's not just, you know, this razzmatazz of ability to cut the line and good running lines and out the back options, but a solid set piece, a decent pack, you know, which they haven't had in a while. So happy for him. Good guy.
Just imagine those guys beat France, you know?
It would be, this is the best Six Nations they've ever had.
Yeah.
What, close to 6-7 months ago, they lost to France, I think, by 50-60 points, and to New Zealand by 90-plus points.
Yeah.
And they've had, what, 3 wins, a draw, and a loss, sorry, in the Six Nations.
Yeah.
And he's unearthed some serious talent, eh?
Proper talent.
Serious talent.
Centre pairing, Flicky.
Best. Who's impressed you within the Italian team?
Obviously, the fullback, can't remember his name, he's the regular that he's been there. Then this young kid that came on and played in the weekend, Pani or something.
Pani, the fullback, yeah. He's called the track, yeah.
You know, special, good pace. The midfield for me is the best part of that.
Brex and Minicello,
yeah.
They are big, strong, take the ball to the line, subtle little touches, defensively unbelievably
strong.
They were
unreal in defence the weekend. Oh, look, I mean, the Welsh side sort of attacked with long passes and, you know, not much work rate, but they got picked off every single time.
Michel Lamora?
I like him.
Good. Tough. You got the Canoni brothers, yeah.
Captain and obviously getting stuck in.
Vincent, Bishop's boy?
Seb Negri?
Yeah, he's consistent. Who's the Bishop's boy?
Vincent.
Yeah.
Came off the bench,
too. Yes.
Bishop,
he's at Exeter, actually.
He played in grade 11. He played 9 for Bishop's second side.
Okay.
No way.
You know.
That's why you just got that one, right?
No way.
Oh. What, did he have a growth spurt?
Apparently, Bucky Spurta and Donny Rousseau was halfback pairings on the 13 Kramer week somewhere up country.
Yeah. On a sad note, George North, that wasn't the finish you want for such a great player. British and Irish Lion, a great Welsh player, but I think 121 appearances.
Yeah.
I think he left on crutches there.
Eh? Yeah, shame.
It's quite sad to see that happening, but what a great player he's been, though.
Wales. I mean, great career, eh? But you can't always script the way you're going to exit.
No.
You know, that's unfortunately the way it is. And I guess for a player like that, you're not identifying. I mean, it's not about how you finish it. Yes, you want to finish it on a high, but like he's obviously scored 50-odd tries for them, I think he did. And great career. Played forever as well.
Yeah, legend. Legend of the game. You know, both positions, centre and wing. Do you remember that image of him carrying Falao
on his shoulders? The Lions series, yeah, proper.
Man, amazing.
Do you guys see the exchange between Neil Jenkins, the water boy, and Reynal?
No, what happened?
Apparently they're going at each other. Like, I'm not sure what the context was there. But in terms of players, like the chirpiest players or lippiest players you guys have played against, does anyone stand out? You know those guys who? Guys that just spoke all day.
George Gregan never shut up.
Yeah. Okay, he's never Gregan,
And Marshy.
Marshy never shut Marshy up as well.
Bad.
Always number nine.
All day. All day.
Ooh, Justin, is it?
And it continued in the pub afterwards as well. All day. Justin, but good banter though.
Yeah.
Justin Harrison?
Oof. A flicky. So every time I see Justin Harrison, I take a selfie with him. With a guy like us, because he gave Flicky a smack. He gave Flicky a smack at Loftus, eh?
So many times I wanted to get a hold of him. Look, he never carried the ball. So he used to ruck you and then, you know, give you a little elbow or follow through. And so many times I wanted to run straight over him. And he was always like in the back line. And then when I get tackled or say I knock a ball, he will be the first to be on top of you screaming, having a little go. And I would say, Justin, get in the front line, boy. And then we can have a proper
chat. But
good man, eh? Good, that's the thing,
you know, the guys who were full of nonsense on the field chirp-wise are always good guys off it, you know, first one to share a beer. You get frustrated with them on the pitch, but then afterwards, just quality.
Jeez, that Wallaby team, Justin Harrison, you had Gregan talking at the back there.
Mali.
There's a lot, that was like the cricket team almost.
Yeah.
Loose forwards were quiet, they weren't too talky.
George Smith quiet?
No, Georgie just did his own thing.
Quiet, Phil Waugh quiet.
Every now and then you can have a good chat with Phil. You know, he'll have something to say to the referee, but Georgie never.
The Kiwis, I'm surprised you're saying Justin Marshall. The rest, I can't think of many other Kiwis that were...
No, just him.
He hasn't stopped either.
He hasn't stopped. Is he still on tour after the World Cup? Has he come back home since the World Cup yet?
I think he's still there.
Yeah. France versus England. France, a good game, first of all. Great second. I think from the... Before the end of the first half till the end of the game, a great game.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like the issue with, you know, England winning a game, you know, like it's always the media that goes on a media storm and, you know, it's coming home. But like, the proper performance, you know, attack is
it
nice.
Coming home?
You never know.
Okay.
I mean, great game.
Yeah.
You know, like I like Jamie George, their skipper, great man. Obviously, he had a bit of family tragedy during it. And I think the whole team sort of rallies around him. He's that type of character. So there's a lot of players I played with and I've got massive respect for them. And, you know, they played some decent rugby on the weekend. For a long time, we watched English rugby and there wasn't much going on.
Yeah.
You know, like, there wasn't like a clear identity, especially on attack. Richard Wigglesworth has taken over the attack and, you know, some proper players. You know, Ben Earl, again, you know, great player.
Yeah.
Just, you know, frustrating to watch those first couple of games, but the last two games, they were outstanding. Yeah. And I think the big change for me was George Martin at lock.
Yeah.
He's come in at four.
And Chisholm.
And he's gone to seven.
Yeah.
You know, that's brought a bit of grunt to that pack. And now suddenly England, the English backs are on the front foot. Ollie Lawrence into the vacuum. You get some good go-forward ball. You've got the slight of hand with Slade on the outside and obviously Ford and at 10. Just and then suddenly you've got these electric backs up wide. You know, Tommy Freeman, big, strong, fast. Is it Waboso?
Burbank.
Yeah.
This kid is electric.
Hey, Waboso, yeah.
He is amazing. That is the future.
But the little bit we saw of him, he looks like he's about to explode.
Every time
he's going to be a superstar.
He's like Jason Robinson. I mean, just in small space, just so powerful.
Good analogy, yeah.
Gets him over the advantage line every single time. So the attack has changed. We were frustrated with their style because we didn't know what it was. They didn't have an identity. They certainly now have got a pack to deliver the killer blow and the punch up front. Good maul, good scrum, solid line-out. And now suddenly, you know, they've always had good set-piece players. I think that they've scored some brilliant set-piece players amongst the backs. They're looking like a really good outfit. I mean, what's
starting
his name,
to look
George?
Like Warwick's team.
Well, it is.
Obviously, it took Eddie's team. Now it's starting to look like his
correct.
Team. After the World Cup, it was a certain brand.
Also, like personnel.
But now it looks like the plan's coming
personnel
together.
Changes. Like, if I had to pick a weakness in the English side, it was like, where's the forward carrying ability? You know, besides like a guy like Genge, who puts his hand up and carries close to the...
Ilkin, yeah.
But like, who is the loose forward that's going to bust? And who's the lock who's going to bust and carry deep and have a little bit of subtlety about them? And they found them. which they haven't had in the past. You know, they returned to, you know, Billy Vunipola last year in the World Cup, didn't quite have the effect at the World Cup that he wanted to have, like, so I think they found a nice balance.
Yeah, with Underhill and Earl at the back, you know, on the flanks and the eighth man, you know, they've got this ability to carry, they're fast, they're quick to the breakdown, and then you've got that heavy pack who can really put teams under pressure. Yeah. So they've got that balance right now.
Do they attack against New Zealand? Because you know what happens when you turned over there.
No, yeah, but I think against the All Blacks, you're going to have opportunity to attack.
Yeah.
Because they play so much rugby deep in their own half, and they make a few errors. They give you opportunity to attack. And then, you know, traditionally, like, they come quite hard off that first spot, the pot of nine, but then they do use the touchline as a safety net. And again, you know, it's easier said than done, but you have time against the All Blacks. You can play rugby with them, and their focus.
So that's the key for me, actually, Shim. That what Scala said there right now, you have time to play. So the French defence wasn't as aggressive off the line in the last.
Terrible, the French defence.
It's dropped off. You know, it's not the Edwards sort of way. And if you think about when England got back into the game against Ireland, the Irish, you know, they'd lost O'Mahony, he went off, and then they weren't as aggressive off the line. So that allowed Ford Smith to attack the advantage line, to a carry, and got their forwards onto the front foot. Same in that game against France. Suddenly you've got English, you know, players running on the front foot, not on the back foot. And they're a different outfit, you know. But, you know, and New Zealand, like you say, will give them that time and space. They don't have an aggressive line speed like South Africa does.
Yeah, they connect.
So it's going to be to their detriment if they don't get off the line against England.
But if you look at England now, they've got Japan, New Zealand. Then they've got Australia, South Africa, and New Zealand again.
Yeah. It's a big year.
It's a hell of a schedule.
I think you look at that schedule and you're happy to get 50% win rate, you know?
Yeah.
You know, like, realistically, without, you know...
Which they can do.
Whether they're good enough to get one over the line against Robinson's All Blacks, that's a hard task. But, like, I think if they play like they did with the ambition they did the last 2 weeks, they're going to give themselves opportunities.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Ollie Lawrence, Flecky, talking about centres.
He's been immense, hasn't he?
Yeah.
He probably took his time a little bit to get into the test arena, but his last two games have just been phenomenal. The try, you know, he's busting. He scored two good tries on the weekend, and I think the previous week he scored a good try as well. You know, he's just, but it's his ability to get England across the line. You know, he's a nuggety little player. Mm. He's tough. His defence is good. He's got a good turn of speed as well. Yeah. You know, I was quite surprised.
A tackle fight of note, though, also.
Yeah.
When he wants to go, gee, he's hard to put down.
You know, he's not going to be the distributor, but that's why Slade is there. You know, that's his job. But with Ollie Lawrence, they're getting good go-forward ball. And that complements the pack and allows those electric outside backs to get into the game.
Main difference for me is that they moved away from the double playmaker, 10-12.
Yeah.
Which they used to have. And then they had Tuilagi, who was the biggest strike weapon ever.
Their second playmaker is one channel wider now.
Yeah. So now they're going the more direct route, simpler. Ollie Lawrence at 12. And then you get Slade, who was at 10 for a long period of his, to step up on the next phase or step up two phases later. Where for so long they went 10-12 playmaker, and then you sort of lose the impact that a guy like a Lawrence or a Tuilagi could have.
And another interesting selection was George Furbank. And he didn't have a great game against Scotland. I think he coughed up two turnovers and allowed Scotland into the game. But since then, he's been phenomenal. I know he came off early on the weekend, but his work rate off the ball is outstanding. He gets into positions that nobody else has and did. A big change from Stewart. So where he was conservative, you know, good under the high ball, big kicking game.
He was king of the skies, pretty sure.
Yeah. This guy is almost like a Vili LaRue or like a Chesney Colby or Curtly Orenson, who's just, you know, working so hard across the field, creating the extra man, you know, working same side. And he's also made a big difference with George Martin in that setup.
I still think if you play the box, for example, if they came in, they were facing the contestable kicking game, you get Freddie Stewart. But if you have the long kicking game, like you face the French kicking game predominantly long, you've got to have a guy like Furbank just carry it back. You have so much opportunity. You don't have to carry every time because it's like a game of gaming grounds. It's when the poor kick, when you put them under pressure, and then you're running at nice spaces, or you're running at forwards, but you've got a guy like him with his skill set, you know, you skim forwards for a living.
What did you make of Marcus Smith at fullback?
So he was
Happy
given...
Flicky, does he get the pass from you?
He definitely got the pass from me. Jim, I still say that, you know, while England was going through a transition in style of play, was he the right choice as a starting 10? And the answer is no. And I think that, but he has certainly proved his worth coming off the bench. My word, he changed when he came on against Ireland. He just added so much flavour to the setup. The Irish allowed him to attack. I mean, the drop goal at the end, any fly off worth, he should have done that. But he had those subtle little changes in pace and put, you know, he did one little short ball to a loose forward and he wrapped around and he got into space and that put Ireland on the back foot. The time and space that he was given by the French was just too much. And that's when he starts to dominate. Yeah. So I think he's fulfilling his role, you know, coming off the bench. As a starter, George Ford for me was outstanding. Yeah. This whole series, he's been brilliant. And but, you know, Marcus Smith has proven his worth coming off the bench and changing a game.
Nice to have that type of player to chase a game. You know,
if Damien McKenzie like, Burden Barrett like on the bench, sort of similar.
Like you've got to have something different. You know, I mean, and he can fill in wherever. And you, if he chases the game, say for example now against New Zealand, you know, he can make a big difference. In the last 20. To pick him at fullback as a starter, I don't think I will.
With high balls coming, contesting.
Look, I'll just always like have the South African hat on and we think, what will we do if Marcus Smith gets picked at fullback and we'll go find him with contestables on the back and he's going to spend the whole day on the deck. So
100%.
It's not ideal for us, but when a long kicking game happens, yeah, I mean, he can definitely do something then.
Manny Chilangi. Well, he signed with Bayonne.
Yes.
Great English career there. Look, a lot of injuries along the way, but he's had his impact on English rugby.
Yeah, and during dark times for English rugby, you know, they haven't really... You know, they've had some good games with him in there, but they haven't really, you know, probably dominated as much as they should have. But, you know, what an immense player. Just, I think John will testify how tough he was to play against.
That's the hardest thing to tackle, John said. I guess if you look at his international career, the game that really stands out is that one at Twickenham against All Blacks.
Yeah.
I think that's...
He made that break on the halfway.
I think it defined his... His career, but like one heck of a player. Obviously, ravaged with injury. You know, like he went through a phase where you could hardly string a couple of games together. But, I mean, comes from a long lineage of scary two lucky brothers, and he certainly added to that.
But this English team does give you something to be excited about the future. You mentioned Furbank. You look at it as a Tommy Freeman on the wing. You got Ollie Lawrence. You know, Chisholm there, you know, the other guy mentioned out Locke.
George Martin's
coming. The only question I have is Dan Cole is 30-something years old. Will Stewart is good, but I'm not sure if he's a world-class prop.
Yeah.
That scrum's going backwards. All bets are off.
Well,
you need someone that's gonna manage that scrum.
Yeah, I mean, if the scrum held up in Paris, they would have been in the final.
Yeah.
Like it was, unfortunately, Ox changed that game you know, in our favour. But I guess, you know, the All Black scrum's powerful. Well, you know, it's a great scrum. Yeah, we always battle to put them away.
You've got good props.
They've got great props.
Lomax.
And, you know, unfortunately, you can't play around the scrum. You know, it's not one of those things you can manage. You can sort of speed up a line out and you try and just win your ball and, you know, play off the back of it. But if your scrum's not going anywhere, you're losing your scrums. When you make a mistake, you've got another scrum coming. The opposition will then lean to take scrums. So you end up having more and more scrums if your scrum malfunctions. So this horrible part as a captain, if your scrum's going backwards.
You can't fix it, yeah.
You can't fix it.
Fabien Galthié, he needed that one.
Seems like there was a bit of pressure there.
Yeah, geez, I think there was lots.
And I think, you know, obviously, I don't quite figure out what's happening in that management, you know, the role that Edwards is playing, and, you know, whether he's still keen to stay there or not. But he's got a critical role to play, you know, the way
Sean Edwards.
Yeah. I mean, his, you know, the way that they defended at the World Cup and prior to the World Cup was immense.
Yeah.
And it suited the way that they wanted to play. Yeah, Galtier has been under a bit of pressure. You know, whether, you know, he's lost key players, you know, DuPont, Ntamack. So it's tough to judge him on this Six Nations. But going forward, the talent that they've got.
No, it's proper.
The pace out wide. What's coming through up front is just unbelievable.
Deporte is the inside centre, is 21 years old, plays for Bordeaux.
I like that guy.
Yeah. It's a Bill Beret, I think he's 21 fullback, 21 years old. Legarek, 21 years old. So
the left winger.
Chilangi,
yeah. The left winger, 20. Berry is also from Bordeaux.
Yeah, Bill Berry.
Yeah.
Bill Berry, the one.
The
DuPont, something else. He's phenomenal. Gael Fiku played good rugby. So there's plenty of talent there.
Yeah. For me, the biggest issue is around their kicking game and the long kicking game. If DuPont makes it look simple, because he takes it from the base, left or right foot, and hammers it into touch 50, 60 meters down the field. Without him, they play through number 10, 10 kicks it long, and teams have worked out, you know, this whole DuPont rule where they keep on creeping, and you've got to make their forwards work. So it's, I think if they change the kicking game, then the workload on their pack of forwards is going to be a lot bigger. So a guy like Antonio, for example, will have to work doubly as hard. And the reason why I think they started with a long kicking game is to do energy-saving part, you know, like manage those forwards. But when we do then get dominance or get 22 entries, we come alive.
Yeah.
Since teams have forced them to work harder, they don't have that explosiveness in the 22, you know.
Maybe that was, you know, the drop-off in the defense in terms of the line speed in the latter part of the English game.
And the
pack is running out of gas.
The pack's running out of gas. So, you know, like, that's the way I see our teams have started. And I think the box started at that November 2 years ago.
Yeah. We started running it back at them.
We just ran everything back at them. And, you know, like in our quarterfinal, you know, Damien Willems calling a scrum in his 22, you know, forcing them to, we got the scrum penalty and then we missed touch or whatever we did. But like, I think they've been found out on their kicking game predominantly. So they've got to change that up for them to get more 22 entries, more territory. Look, all changes when you bring a guy like DuPont back who can just hammer it from the base.
Is it dangerous just to wait for him? Because they did a World Cup and it became a sideshow. Is DuPont going to play it, I think, against the Springboks? Surely you got to start looking past him or developing some sort of depth. He's good. He's a great player.
He's a great player. And I guess the narrative doesn't get driven by the players. It gets driven by the media. It's not, you know, we know the story. If one of us gets injured, like, yes, you want to come back as quickly as possible, but the next bloke is in a position and you do the best for that guy to play and play at his peak performance. But he's a special player and he brings something different to them. We mentioned earlier with Gibson Park in and around the ruck. In the 22, when he's number nine, I mean, he's like an extra loose forward. Yeah. He just picks and goes and shows and goes and keeps you honest and offloads and takes it to the line. And sort of, you don't really know which way he's going, you know, which is bloody hard to defend.
He probably brings more into the change room as well.
Sure.
Just leadership and just a winning mindset. And, you know, he's really been able to galvanize the players around him.
They go to Argentina next, which can be a difficult place to tour. Contepermi head coach and Checker did a great job with them. So that won't be easy there. With Contepermi there, Argentina will not be an easy series for France in Argentina.
And whenever these two nations do come up against each other, like they sort of, it becomes even more emotional than it is normally. The Parisian comes out and we've all played in Argentina where the crowd gets in behind and, you know, like the Coke bottles are flying off the stand and the whistles is going. That's going to be proper. It's going to be
depends
good to watch.
Depends on what side goes there, right?
Yeah, they could take a young team.
Traditionally, they always do that. And they've lost,
yeah,
you know, over the last couple of years in Argentina.
In Argentina.
It's always been tough for them. It's because they've never taken their full-strength side.
It's something that they do a lot in their competition where, like, all their away games, they sort of send a weakened side out there and they really target their home games. But it's actually a pity that they, if they do that, that they don't take their strongest side and go out there, go to Argentina. Because, like, it's so nice for us to sit and watch, you know. It's normally after Bright, 11 o'clock at night or whenever kickoff is it, and you just put it on in the background and all of us can sit and relax and...
Yeah, I mean, Nick is not in good shape at that time of the night.
Neither I know. He's done. He's in bed by then.
He's got endurance issues.
But it's nice when the Argentinian
depends on what
test matches come on.
Guys, we're going to pick. Look, we don't have much time. It's been a great Six Nations since Flecky came. And everyone listened to him. And then we had two great weekends towards the end.
Where's John, by the way?
Actually, I don't know. Did he leave with an empty briefcase to go pick up money in Joburg or something?
I think he's harvesting. He's harvesting somewhere.
He's been suitably replaced.
Yeah, exactly. Flecky, his mentor.
Thank you.
Put tomato smoke at Newlands outside. Team of the tournament. So I've got the responsibility of picking the tight five. You pick the loose forwards. And Flecky, you got the back line. So should you start 1-5 or start from the back? Do you want to start, Flecky?
Start 1-5.
Okay, loose head, Pierre Schoeman. Look, Cyril Bayer, I could have thought maybe Genge, but for me, Piers Koeman's probably in a struggling pack, or not the toughest pack. I think he was the yeah. go-to guy in terms of toughness. Hooker, I thought maybe the English hooker.
Jamie George,
sorry. But Dan Sheehan, for me, has been the best hooker in the Irish pack. Tight, a tricky one. It was either Furlong or Winnie Antonio. But at the end, I just went with Antonio purely because of his carry, solid in the scrum.
So that's how he gets around the field.
Then he gets around the field for a big... It almost looks like he got fitter as the tournament went on, because he played every single game till about 60, 70 minutes, and he had a long shift this weekend. Locks now. Okay. He's a big traditional four lock. I thought Miafoe was bloody good against the French lock that played this weekend. Carries dominated. Joe McCarthy, I thought, started well, but finished off.
You can't take anything away from that first three performances. He was proper.
Yeah, but what worries me about him is that the England game, when you needed the hard men, when the England pack came.
George Martin, mate.
Yeah. You reckon George Martin?
Yeah.
As a four lock.
That guy is young. He's going to come through. He's tough.
For me, George Martin.
So like, he only played two games.
In the first 3 weeks, if we sat like this, we would have gone Tyke, Byrne, McCarthy.
Itoje at five?
Could be. We pick him at five.
The big result England had was against Ireland. Look who played well.
Yeah.
Itoje. When it got tough and they needed a physical guy, when the rubber hit the road, Itoje stood up. So I'll go with Itoje at five.
Yeah.
And four, I'm still not sure, but I'll go with Miafoe. George Martin, good mention. I'll go with Miafoe. Made meters the whole time, carried well against a tough English pack.
Okay, I'm going to go for the easiest one first. Number eight, Ben Earl.
Yeah.
I mean, he showed us last year in the World Cup that, you know, he's made the step up from being a great premiership player to a proper test match player. And obviously, his performance against Ireland last week, and I think would stand out for the tournament. Then it gets a bit muddy for me, because there's so many players who's put their hand up, played well. Open side flanker, Tommy Rafael with a lot of turnovers. The last two games, Christie from Scotland.
Mm.
Big impact on the ground, but I'm going to go with Lamaro, captain, Italy. Most successful. So we've got to have them in there.
Yeah.
I wish I was part of the celebrations post that in Cardiff. Cardiff is good night out. And then blindside. Well,
we're talking about celebrations. Dublin, St. Patrick's weekend, Six Nation champs.
Yeah, good one, eh?
I'd rather be in Dublin.
Yeah.
Straight on the Guinness, exactly. Guinness for 12 hours.
Yeah.
And then blindside flanker, I think I'm just going to use one of the other loose forwards I really like, Kalyan Dodis.
Yeah.
Going to plug him on a blindside flanker. Just because Ben Earl's not really a line-out option.
Yeah.
Do I do 9 and 10?
Yes, you do.
Oh, sorry, 9 and 10, my mistake.
Okay, 9 is easy for me, very easy.
Gibson Park.
It's standout player, great performance again on the weekend. And I think they go in pairs, so 10 I'll go for Crowley. I think a nice step.
Okay. Controversial.
Finn.
No.
Fabulous Finn.
No.
Ford.
No. I actually like Crowley, and I like the fact that like a youngster's, you know, stood up.
Okay.
Sexton left a big hole where everyone thought he was going to leave quite a big hole in that Irish attack. And then Crowley's, especially the first 3 weeks. On the weekend, they were too lateral, but I think that was the team as a whole. I'm going to go with those two.
Interesting. Crowley, I didn't see the Crowley one coming.
But
good call. It's your call, Scala.
I quite like it.
Okay, that's nice. Flicky.
It's gone for a combination.
Yeah.
So for me, at the back, Hugo Keenan, just a quality rugby player from Ireland. I know he got injured in the tournament, but for me, he's just a class act. He's all-round game, you know, makes quality decisions, gets into good positions, good kicking game as well. So for me, he slots in at 15. On the wing, left wing, James Lowe.
Yeah.
Again, top finisher, big lad, good left boot.
Finish as well, hey?
Oh, just the way he...
Proper.
Just runs over people close to the line. Right wing, Damien Penno.
Yeah.
Duan? He's a beast.
Duan? No space for Duan.
No space for Duan.
Okay.
Notable mention.
Okay, notable mention.
Hat-trick.
Hat-trick hero.
Hat-trick. One game.
Against England, which we love.
Yeah.
One game. But on the right wing, Damien Penno. That guy's a beast.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just so big and strong and opportunistic, and
the excitement around him when he starts running.
Yeah.
Even sometimes he starts going across the field like this and sort of looks for a hole.
He had a banner nervous during the World Cup with the record.
He did, hey.
Brian was nervous.
No wonder Brian was so edgy.
Every show was on, he was nervous.
Until France got knocked out, then
his record was about to go.
Exactly. Oh. And then, like we mentioned earlier on, Wabosa, just, you know, he needs to be mentioned, but that kid is going to be really special.
So who's that?
Wabosa.
Oh, Wabosa, yeah. Hey, Wabosa, yeah.
He's a special talent coming
proper
through.
Proper guess.
So, and he only played, one and a bit games. Yeah. So something to look forward to in the future. In terms of the midfield, obviously there's some quality players. Bundy Aki was exceptional the whole tournament. And then for me, Hugh Jones really stood up and on attack. You know, he just gets through and gets into good positions and scores good tries. But I've gone for a combination of Brex and Menoncella.
Oh, I like that.
That's it. Nice.
Yeah, I like that.
They were the combo of the comp. And they're the reason why Italian rugby is on the rise again. And they were really, really good. Strong, you know, big hits, subtle touches on attack, good hard straight running, you know, quality. It's so good to see a combination coming right at international rugby. You know, long time ago, you had the likes of Bunce and Little and Horan and Herbert. Mm-hmm. This is a combination that needs to be recognized and acknowledged. Quality.
It's a bright future. Do you got the 6-2 split, 7-1, 8-0 or 5-3 with that team? We need some reinforcements at lock because Mia Fo won't go for a full 80 minutes.
I can promise you it's not going to be the 7-1. That's the only one I can rule out.
I'm joking.
There's no 7-1, boys.
Good, nice team. So what? Italians, we've got three Italian players. Got BC maybe in the mix.
Yeah. Good player.
He could have. He could possibly be there. Who coaches the team?
Gonzalo
coaches it.
My man.
That's it.
Tell me, moment of the Six Nations for you guys. Anything that stands out?
Italy. Their performance. Every time, you know, bar the island game where they just got
that kick against France. God, BC should have just.
Every time you think, like this weekend, maybe they can't deliver the goods again, they were up there. Yeah, Italy. It was amazing to watch. And, you know, like I was a little bit nervous because, like, you know, they play against Wales and I had them down as quite comfortable favourites. But, I mean, the way they played, the intent they played was, because so often with them in the past, they will have one big performance like against Scotland and then it tapers down the following week. But for them, 3 weeks on the bounce, they were super competitive, which is
amazing.
Best
Six Nations ever. We're not done yet, guys. Congratulations to Ireland. We'll welcome them to the Republic later on in the year. But quickly this weekend, boys, before we wrap up, URC back this weekend. Anything you guys looking forward to?
I'm actually going to the game this weekend. I'm working on it.
Yeah.
Is it Edinburgh that's down here?
Yeah.
Big game for the Stormers. So, you know, like from our point of view, Stormers' point of view, I think we need a bonus point.
Yeah.
We need to just get a little bit high up that lock. Base 7th, where are we now?
It's ninth, eighth or ninth, yeah.
So also
best
like
win,
you don't want to be getting at the end of the season and chasing your tail and all of a sudden, you know, you've got European rugby that's going on the Investec Cup and you end up a month on the road and ultimately that catches up with you. And then obviously the Bulls. You want the Bulls to go and forge ahead.
Yeah. Jake's done well with the Bulls this year. What do you guys think he's done differently? In recruitment to different player? Because they're sitting pretty at the moment. They've got a tour. I think they've got the Dragons and Leinster away. Then the rest of their games are at home.
I think they're packed, the scrum. Wilkulo. Steenkamp has made a big impact on their scrum.
Young 8. Good player.
Hanekom, Gumede. And I guess that the standout feature of the two South African franchises that are, I mean, at the forefront, the Stormers and the Bulls, is the overseas professional, how good they've been. Guys that's on the Springbok fringes, you think of Marco van Staden, Marcel Kutsia, Ruan Urkia for the Bulls. And then you go Akker van der Merwe, that's in that hooker, Johan Groblaar, all guys who's been in the Springbok mix of the past, but they're now playing for the Bulls predominantly. That's their bread and butter. Those players, same with the Stormers, I mean, they've made the biggest impact on their season so far.
For the guys, I mean, Scott, look, you played obviously Saracens, Flicky, when you're at Bath. For the guys to reintegrate into their teams, the European guys, how difficult is it? You know, England, you know, you're playing in Lyon, full stadium. Now some of the guys have to jump on a plane, come. Well, some of the Scottish guys are now coming to obviously face the Stormers. Other guys have got to go back to the respective teams. How difficult is it to reintegrate those guys?
I mean, obviously, it's a challenge. You know, you don't have those guys in the build-up to any of those games, and they've been in, you know, different environments. But look, if they've been part of that setup for a while, it should be a seamless sort of process, right? Of yeah. just slotting back in and being part of that, you know, that match prep. So I think they're always going to add value to the group, you know, yeah. coming from somewhere else. And I don't think it's too much of a challenge.
I think they can be two-sides to it. I think yeah. you can be in a great, like Saracens all the years, the internationals wanted to play for Saracens. Yeah. That was their home. And you get the same now, I think, with the Bulls and the Stormers.
So it's a cultural thing, eh?
They want to play for Dobbo. Yeah. They want to play for the Stormers. The players realize that that's their bread and butter. And, you know, they spend the bulk of the year playing for the Stormers or the Bulls for that matter. But then it also can be the other way. So if it's not going that well with your franchise, take the Sharks, for example. For those internationals to then go and reintegrate themselves with the Sharks, that's one of the 11 URC games so far. I think it can be tricky if they can't identify with the culture that's currently happening there. But like, it should be super simple. And the players, the internationals, doesn't matter how they're involved, they should be at the club at the Monday or Tuesday going like, yes, boys, this is how we go forward. Whether he's playing or not, you know, it's important for all the players to see his attitude towards, you know, the Saracens or the Bulls or the Stormers.
Quick one. Have you guys been watching any Super Rugby at all? We talk a lot. There's this...
No, Crusaders are battling.
Crusaders are battling. Yeah. Just interesting. Like, just keep your eye on the Crusaders lost four in a row.
True. And Penny's coaching there.
Yeah, the Reds winning. Chiefs are the form team at the moment. New Zealand were World Cup finalists. So a lot. It's going to be an interesting, I think, next couple of months in terms of rugby and what's going to be happening. No Adi Sevilla, no Richie Mwanga. Reyes has been a highly successful coach. Yeah. But
and I see the players are coming out saying, stating that they miss South Africa.
What's that?
Barrett came out saying
let's be honest. When they say that,
they miss coming to South Africa and playing rugby against our franchises.
Correct. They miss it. Yeah. It's hard. It's tough to play. Yeah. Then their game improves playing against South Africa.
Yeah. I remember that test match at Mbombela where like they were shell-shocked when, I mean, we won quite comfortably. And the next week, obviously, you know, for Fozzie to keep his job, they turned us over in Ellis Park. But like... the thing afterwards, we were sitting there, so many of those players have never played in South Africa, let alone a test match.
Yeah. What's going to happen?
It is a thing to come and play a test match or play a big franchise game in South Africa.
In front of 50,000
people. 50,000 people. How good has the crowd been in South Africa, guys?
Brilliant. I think we're
it's
gonna,
unreal.
I think this test match series now is going to be just for from a South African island twice here.
Isn't the
Irish series I think it's going to be incredible.
Our series is sold out.
Well, Durban sold out in 90 minutes, I think it was.
Yeah. Well, the All Black one, they're still waiting to sell it. Yeah, I know that people are really asking for that. Yeah. That's going to sell out quickly also. So up for a bumper season. Okay, last question. Do Ireland sit on the top table? When do they sit on the top table?
What do you
mean? In terms of world rugby.
Everyone says they're the best team in the world.
Do they?
I guess when the ranking says they're number one in the world.
When the Web Illustrator goes to Ireland.
They probably have to beat us.
They have to beat us.
So that's how big the series is.
Yeah, I think so.
Twice, though. They probably have to beat us twice.
Look, I think they probably have to do us twice. But like it's, I mean, we're obviously super proud rugby nation. We're not going to hand it over. But this is a great side. Like, remember, like, they got a result in New Zealand. Yeah, three match series, won two out of three. Proper rugby side. So they'll be up for this. And, you know, their players get managed in such a way where they will play.
Yeah.
You know, they will play the test matches because that's part of what they are managed to do. So, you know, for us, you know, like we hope most of our top players, you know, make the season in one piece. But like, we can't wait.
Cool. Flicky, thank you very much.
Thank you, Shun.
Thanks, Flicky.
Thanks, Skelly.
Well done. You can relax now. You can leave Ronnebosch. You know, I made sure you're welcome here, treated well.
I don't see any of your jerseys up here, boy. What's happening? Like, I see the fun sales up here. I've seen you in that.
Yes, Shimmy, here's a teeny bopper.
Look at that.
Look at that. A young Denzel Washington, boy.
Guys, I promise you, Ronnebosch, I'll go steal a jersey out of Shimmy's house when he invites me for a drink, and I'll come put it up on the wall, yeah.
Thank you very much, guys. We're going to wrap up the box office now. This was our last episode of this series. We'll catch up when Ireland hit the shores of South Africa for another exciting episode. URC Rugby back now. Investec Champions Rugby back now. Thanks to Robbie Flex, Kalkberger at the, legendary Rondebosch ground here where plenty of wins have been had. The box office is now closed.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.